Welcome once again to The Conference Call, a podcast by radio people for radio people. Proud to be joined by KJRB Spokane, KLIV San Jose, rock jock, tower climber extraordinaire, Brother Ralph Cole, how are you?
Okay, bud. Not too bad today.
Hey, listen, I know I pulled you away. You were hanging drywall this morning, and I hate to pull you away from that project, but we got an important podcast going on here.
That's better, because I would have preferred it yesterday because I was underneath the house.
All right, Cole. Look, I mentioned KJRB Spokane, KLIV in San Jose, but let's rewind, if you don't mind, and let's start, I guess, how does a kid from New York get the radio bug and then move to the Northwest and ramp into a radio career?
You know, since you mentioned it, it's the damnedest thing. I was like, God, and it'd have to be some of your older listeners, I was like the audio and film guy that would go from classroom to classroom with films. I was the pocket protector group of guys.
Really?
Yeah, and so I went ahead, and for some reason, a guy at a gas station where I was pumping gas was an electrical engineer, and he was kind enough. I'd find an old radio, and he was kind enough to actually draw the schematic, and we'd go up to his house at night and work on this stuff. And so the guy gave me a bunch of time, and so then I got into listening to radio, and I was just real lucky, because if you can imagine, the guys that I grew up with or listening to was like Cousin Brucey, Murray the K, B. Mitchell Reed, BMR, Dick Biondi, Sam Holman, Joey Reynolds, and, oh, God, I forgot the PD of ABC later on.
Rick Sklar.
Yeah, it was Sklar's era and everything. So anyway, it was just real interesting because as a kid that was, what, 15, 16, I was listening to the absolute best in the number one market in the United States. And so it was just real interesting. And to make a long story a little bit shorter, we moved to Longview. And then, and I understand now from watching some of my site that I had started listening to Kissin because it was right nearby. It was like another radio site. And so when I was listening to Kissin, it was guys like Dick Saint and Morgan. And for a brief period, and he was only there for 6 months, but I caught him, was the real Don Steele. And when I listened to him, I said, this is what I got to do. That was the thing that, you know, all the rest of these guys were good, but that was the one through his energy and his spirit was the guy that just, I said, this is it. And so I wound up in Longview starting at my first job. And remember, I'm a kid with a New York accent. And what I figured out later on in radio is nobody likes to work weekends, so no matter how bad you are, you can always get a job, or at least at that time, working on weekends because they didn't want to work or they were too drunk or who the hell knows what. Fill in, right? Fill in. And so I wound up working at KEDO in Longview. That was my first job. And at that time, everybody was required to have what they call public affairs. They were like half-hour pre-recorded public affairs, I don't know, talking about, you know, all manner of different boring subjects. In the whole Portland market and in Longview on Sunday mornings, which is where I started, everybody was playing those except for where I worked. And I started out by being an engineer for a guy that would come in, and he gave me a song list, and we played polkas for 2 hours on Sunday mornings. And you'd think it was funny, but he was the only musical source, and the phones would light up because the whole area was filled with Finns and Norwegians and Swedish guys. And so anyway, I wound up doing that, and true to form, if I had to do something, my mother would correct me on my elocution, so I got rid of my accent. And she was my voice coach, I guess, huh? And so, needless to say, a couple months later, something would happen, and they needed a guy to fill in here or fill in there. And so that's what I wound up doing. Across the street, it was easy listening, and across the street was a guy, let's say, a couple guys, Dan Martin, who was just the nicest guy in the world, and he wound up going to KGW. And then they had a PD there when I first came into the market by the name of Jerry Clifton, which a lot of you guys aren't aware of, but if you go ahead and do any kind of research, He was an absolute gorilla program director in major markets in the eastern part of the United States. Neat guy.
You talk about Dan Martin and Clifton. You're talking about KLOG, another heritage station in the Longview Kelso area.
Right, over at Clock.
Yeah. Pat O'Day was there for a while.
Way before.
Yeah.
So the other thing that wound up happening is I'm in New York and I listen to Sam Holman at WABC, and then we moved to Longview and I hear him because he's a PD at Kissin in Portland, and then I moved to Longview and he's the owner of Clog. It was the damnedest thing. And I finally got to meet him years later at a convention, and he was at PAMS at that time, Jingle Company. There are a few guys I've met in my life that when they walk in the door opens before them. You just see, it's not necessarily the power, but it's just their being. And Sam was one of those guys. The other guy I met was Scott Shannon. This is years later. I'm kind of jumping a bit. There was San Luis Obispo. There's some little record convention or something. And this is before club music started or anything. But he had we were by a pool and it was like a break or something. And I'd never seen the guy before. And he was doing that stuff. And I said, thank God he ain't in my market because I don't want to be against the guy. You know, it was just one of those things where you meet certain people that are naturals. And he was one of them. Anyway, I wound up coming up to the harbor, and God bless me, Stan Foreman wound up hiring me, and I just got lucky to be around people that were a hell of a lot better than I was. And, you know, Stan Foreman was a god of Capitol Records and in the whole Northwest, just a little bit behind the scenes, and worked with a bunch of guys there and got lucky, went over to Spokane and to go to get my education, and I had a guy that was a chief engineer there that I knew through a friend and a contact of mine, and he said, yeah, Ralph, I got a job for you at KGA. We can work part-time and this and that and blah, blah, blah. And I went, okay. I get over there, and they fired him. So I walked into the town. I'm getting ready to go to school, and I got no damn job. They wound up hiring me as part-time, and I worked there for 6 months, and I think I was like number one in seniority in the place. It was just a toilet. It was just a toilet. But God, the stick on that thing. I was getting letters from people on the North Slope of Alaska and Australia and everything. It was unbelievable. And then there's stories about KGA and stuff, but I'll just tell you one, and it's the honest to God truth. It was verified by another guy. Before I came there, they were top 40, and nobody could figure out what the hell was going on, because when they went on Night Pattern, they had a downtown studio, but they had a guy that had a babysit the transmitter. And at random, the thing would go off the air for 10 or 15 or 20 seconds, and then come back on. And it may not happen for an hour or 2 hours. It just happened off and on, and nobody could figure the damn thing out. Well, the guy that was doing there was your basic, just like I was, an old long-haired hippie guy with a 53 Dodge pickup, and he was just sitting there babysitting this thing. And what wound up happening that we found out later on, I'll go back just a little bit. The transmitter for that thing was about 60 feet long. And if it was 50,000 watts, there's 100,000 watts of power going through what they call the final tubes, the end two tubes, at 25,000 watts apiece. Anyway, going through those things. So you can't just go ahead and open a door and look at it. And I can't remember. They must have been running, let's call it 1,000 volts or something. There's a hell of a lot of power that went through this thing. And so what wound up happening that we found out later on is this guy was selling dope. He had a whole bunch of baggies. He would open the interlock, take it off the air, and he'd stuff like, I don't know, three, four, half a dozen of these things behind the main tubes in that transmitter. And he figured if the cops came in, nobody was going to go ahead and inspect it, because you're seeing glowing shit, and I mean, it looks like Frankenstein's lab, and somebody come in to go ahead and buy an ounce, he'd open the thing up, interlocks would go off, they'd go off the air, he hands them the bag, closes it, and they're back on the air. That one is a hard story for anybody.
Hey, it's the Northwest Radio Podcast. We're joined by Brother Ralph Cole. You were talking about KGA, Ralph, the 50,000-watt flamethrower in Spokane. Let's jump real quick, if it's okay with you, to KJRB, yeah. The Mighty 790. And I want to throw out a few names and then get some commentary from you.
Yeah.
Guys like...
Hated the sumbitch. Worst guy I ever worked with.
Then we got Steve, Charlie Brown, Norm Gregory, Chad Parrish, Joey Michaels, the young wonder, Gary Taylor, Rick Hansen, Ross Woodward. How did you fit into that, and what did you end up doing at KJRB?
Well, the interesting part is I started out the same type of deal. They just needed a body to fill in weekends, and I was there. And through Stan, who knew Steve, they were kind enough to hire me over there. I actually got hired by a guy by the name of Mike Dalton, his predecessor. He was a nice enough guy, but how do I go through this? He went ahead, and it was the interesting part is that they were just such heavy on personality and didn't really care about being tight or whatever. And so, you know, and it was a hell of an intimidating place. And he had an air check right before he was getting ready to leave. He was moving on to something else. And I said, well, Mike, what do you think? He said, Ralph, you sound good, but I don't think you're going to make it in radio. And I went, okay. And I was depressed for about 3 weeks. And then I said, the hell with you. And here we go. And I worked harder than anybody else, you know, to go ahead and do it. So when I was in Spokane, I got lucky to be on something called the conference calls. And so as bad as I was, before we get into the staff, I was being coached by Mark Driscoll at ORFM in New York, Bobby Ocean at KFRC, Chris Bailey at KCBQ in San Diego, and Steve York at WCFL in Chicago. And they were sending me air checks. Myself and Bob Anthony, we all could have gotten fired for this, who was across the street at Krem. We were friends, and we didn't talk about what our stations were doing, but he and I, after I'd get a tape in, would go ahead and listen to the tape and try and replicate the sets that we heard word by word and phrase by phrase to get better and better and better. And out of that market, we got real lucky. I got into the Bay Area. Anthony wound up going to KFRC and KHJ. This is out of Spokane. Then a couple other guys, Harder and Conrad, wound up doing KFRC also. So we, out of a top 100 market, there were a lot of guys that did well. Charlie wound up going down to Dallas. So did Tracy. One of our weekenders went to Pittsburgh and then Chicago. Oh, God, I'm trying to think. And then God knows everybody, you know, Seattle. They just own the KJRB guys eventually own Seattle. Charlie was the morning guy when I was there, and he was just every ounce of his body was talking into that 77. And he was fast, and he was creative. And the company was different in that it didn't mind spending money because they knew if you spent money on marketing, you'd make money. It wasn't run by bookkeepers. It was run by the whole corporation was run by people that appreciated marketing. So we had giveaways and all manner of different things. Rick Hansen was one of the midday guys who was just every bit as smooth as anything you'd wind up getting. And everybody was happy. That's the other part of it. There was competition, but nobody was trying to drop a knife in anybody's back. So, and we were all working 60 and 70-hour weeks. It would be similar to what I would think would happen if you're at some kind of a startup in the Silicon Valley or in Seattle, where guys were just devouring this stuff, and it was pizza and beer on Friday nights, and you were doing whatever you could do to be the best. Let's see, you mentioned Ross. Ross was part of what was called the United Nations. There's a United Nations, a group of people in Spokane, and Ross was there, and God knows he got every award that was there, and he would have been a top five market guy. He chose to stay in Spokane. There was another guy by the name of John Kowski who remained in Spokane, and Anthony had a good point. He said, Ralph, there's no difference between any of us. A lot of guys just decided to stay where they were, you know. Michaels was just the absolute most pleasant guy. It was just a bunch of nice guys that just liked to raise hell and party and just were in love with the music and the product and everything else. I couldn't speak higher of it. I don't know if I've missed anybody. Chad was the production manager when I started. He was replaced by Jim Campman. And by that time, I was working 6 to 9 at night on the air. And what wind up happening is on a Friday afternoon, the sales pigs had come in after they were done on the golf course. And at about 4 o'clock, they'd hand in their order, Well, Jim wanted to leave at 5 o'clock, and so he was a buddy of mine, but what he did is he skimmed the talent off the top, and then when I got in at 6 o'clock at night, I had like 20 or 25 spots I had to do that started the next day. So he said, the hell with it, I ain't cutting it, I'm out of here.
Hey, Cole, believe me, not much has changed in that production deadline time, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah. No. It's, you know, if you got the order, that's what keeps the lights on and keeps the salary being paid, and that's the way it works. And a lot of this stuff isn't done 9 to 5 where you walk in and get stuff done. And especially in the markets like your size, you don't have a lot of agency stuff, so it is all local, you know, which is the beauty of what radio is.
Hey, Brother Ralph Cole joining us now. Ralph, real quick, before I want to turn to the mastermind of the whole thing, Steve West. How do you suppose Steve put together such a great dynamic staff?
I don't know how. First he had an ear for music, right? So he just had an ear and was allowed, I would think, when he was in Hoquiam to experiment a lot. And just got guys that were enthusiastic, I guess is the best way to say it, you know, that were hungry and enthusiastic. And his critiques weren't a bitch session. It was always, okay, let's do this. How can we do this better, or this set, or that, or watch this, or watch that? You know, and so an empowerment kind of thing. I have the feeling kind of like maybe what O'Day may have done at Seattle, although I didn't know that. But that's how Steve did it, and he's the same pleasant kind of guy today that he was back then.
And the story goes, Steve goes from Grace Harbor, KGHO, and gets to KJR finally, and then he wants to go out and be a PD, so he gets KTAC Tacoma, I-85, the Star Station, and beats KJR in Tacoma.
Oh, yeah.
Pat O'Day says, hey, I got a deal for you, Steve. Why don't we move you to Spokane to our KJRB and get him the heck out of Tacoma and get him out of Pat's hair?
Well, that would make sense, yeah. And when I was down in the Bay Area, there was some of that kind of stuff going on too, but that's kind of by inference, you know, stuff that you can't lay a hand on. Well, and the other thing, KJRB was the farm team for Seattle.
Exactly.
Right? I think they did the same thing with Charlie. I think Charlie worked like 6 to 9 at night at KJR, and then I can't remember how that worked. They moved him to mornings in Spokane. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why or whatever, but of course, then naturally, he came back to Seattle and just killed the market.
So real quick, was it KNEW when you went there? And did you guys call it 790 or 79?
790, but the calls had changed, I'm guessing, a few years back when Gary Taylor was there.
Right.
So yeah, we were KJRB, but even, let's call it like 5-6 years after that, the people in Spokane were just still mad at it that they had changed those calls, because people were just literally in love with that station. And that's what it did. It worked into the community, and it was very community involved with haunted houses and the basketball games that they would play and everything else. I think the 1 year West was there, he said, you guys are going to like the uniforms we got this year. They got the same thing that I think the Atlanta NBA team had. I mean, there was no shortage of doing stuff the right way, you know.
Hey, talking about KJRB, how was the battle with Krem, you know, with Mark Allen, Murdoch in the Morning, Andy Barber, and guys like that? How was that dynamic?
Well, we had a little bit better stick, so that really helped. So we was a little bit more powerful, but it was back and forth, and what wound up happening is KJRB was so successful, we were running 22 minutes of commercials an hour in the morning, you know, and I think I was running like 18 to 20 an afternoon drive. And there comes a point where people figure, wait, I'm here to listen to the music and not the commercials, and no matter how good you are, there's going to be a problem. And so that was the continuing battle at that place, is to go ahead. And a lot of it, as you remember, were units. So instead of if you had like a 3-minute break, instead of having 3 commercials that were 60 seconds long, you could have 6 that were 30 seconds long. It was just an absolute, uh-huh, an absolute killer. But yeah, when I was there, they owned the town. It had a market of 13 properties. The radio station had between 40% and 50% of the audience, and that didn't leave a whole hell of a lot left for anybody else.
So you're there in Spokane for a while, your brother Ralph Cole, and then I never really did get from you how you get from there to the Bay Area at KLIV in San Jose.
Well, it's like anybody else that was in the business. You're always sending out tapes and resumes and doing stuff, and I just got lucky. One of the guys that I had knew had worked there and gave me a recommendation, and they brought me in. And I'll tell you, it was when you hop from number 100, essentially, into the top five market in the United States, and you're across the street from a station that was station of the year 2 or 3 years in a row with talent and unlimited money, and that's unlimited money and funds. It was a hell of a, you know, it was a hell of a situation. I remember when I got in there, I think a few months after I started, they were giving away Mick Jagger's private car, and our station was giving away tickets to the local Cineplex. And so what KLIV did is, once again, what happened in Spokane is we stayed local to the South Bay, the Silicon Valley. And so it was the radio station in the valley. And that's how it survived as long as it did. It didn't try and be a San Francisco radio station, although we wound up beating KYA up there in San Francisco, and our stick at night hardly went past Redwood City, which is about 20 miles out. Uh-huh.
So, Ralph, KLIV is a pretty decent stick. We're talking late 70s, kind of the end of the disco era, getting into the Van Halen and stuff like that. What was the station formatted like?
It was a basic top 40, and the market itself was kind of like the San Francisco market was kind of like how Boston was, Boston, Massachusetts. I don't know quite how to describe it, but there were a lot of groups like Aerosmith and stuff that just didn't fit what happened in the Bay Area, and record promoters, because I was doing music then, would go crazy, and I said, it ain't right. It ain't going to happen. And I can't really describe the sound, but when you were there, you knew what it was. Like Springsteen was one of the last ones, one of the last big markets to break. Where we were, it was basic Van Halen and Motown kind of stuff.
Yeah, I was going to ask, I mean, can a station at that time play Donna Summer and Van Halen?
Yeah, towards the Donna Summer thing, that was getting tough. But then again, everybody in the business was getting stared. And when you heard Dance the Night Away by Van Halen, and you know they're playing club music, everybody was getting nervous. That was around the time that I wound up leaving when all that stuff started. But I was just happy to be before then when you were playing Santana, Van Halen. I can't really recall a whole bunch of others, but it was, you know, Clapton, you know, a light, maybe like an AOR light and a light. Light funk or Motown. That's kind of where that blend was. It was kind of a suburban kind of thing.
Brother Ralph Cole joining us on the Northwest Radio podcast. And Ralph, real quick, I know there's a Van Halen story involving a limo and kind of a crazy party night at the Cow Palace. Or what was that?
Well, that's when you wind up doing stuff, you wind up when you're in that market, you can go ahead and party and raise all the hell you want. And that was kind of like part of that era. And then Van Halen wound up doing a day on the green. And I can't remember if that was the first or second time or third time I was in a limo. So I don't know. Warner Brothers hired a limo. And so I'm in there with the guys from KOME, which is an AOR station. Mm-hmm. And KSJO, which is another AOR station. And we each had a couple squeezes with us or whatever. And so I'm sitting there at the top 40 station, but we're all kind of there. And I had backstage a day on the green. And the best smoke I ever heard had was, at that time anyway, was from Roth. You know, everybody. And Van Halen was just the kind of guys that just liked to party. You know, that's all they did. They were just a good time band. And 6 or 8 weeks before, they were sitting playing high school assemblies in Pasadena High School. Mm-hmm. You know, so the company knew that they had something unique. And boy, it sure worked for them.
Ralph, throwing out a few more names here. Sholin, Ocean, Dr. Don St. John, John McFlanagan. All the guys at KFRC, which was your direct competitor. How did you even approach something like that?
Just had to be yourself. You know, we knew what we were and we weren't there. And so we did what we did where we were the best we could, because once again, we were selling local and didn't have much national advertising business. Our numbers held. So we were doing okay at that. Ocean, who was critiquing me when I was in Spokane, and I wound up seeing each other a few times, and what a guy, you know, was just an absolute neat guy. Schoen was the guy that I had followed in San Jose, and it's hard to follow a legend, but he's the guy that had the ear. There are a few people that had an ear, and Dave did. He did not pick stiffs. He knew what worked. He knew what worked in markets and wound up being eventually the group music director of the whole RKO radio group, which essentially hit 90% of the population in the United States. So he was an important guy. I wound up meeting Mac Flanagan. This is after a long time, on the phone a few years back, and he wound up being, and I never knew it, and a lot of us guys never talked about it. We were both in NAMM, and it was interesting, the stories that he related and stuff. If you were there, you got problems. And so it was real neat to hear John, and John helped me out a lot more than he could do if he was in radio. But we did talk some radio things, and I was across from him because he was doing afternoon drive, and there was just a way about John that is he's a non-replicatable type of thing. There's certain guys that are that way. We had a guy that worked for us part-time that came in. A lot of guys will leave wherever they are in Nebraska or whatever and try and make it on the West Coast. And so KLIV hired this guy part-time, and he did fill-in. And I was listening, and I said, this guy is incredible. There was no way I could hear that within 6 months there was no way I could compete with this guy if he was to stay. And I knew he could just kill in ratings. And I told my program director, I said, look, I said, right now, put me on 7 to midnight. I'll go back to all nights. You got to put this guy in afternoon drive. And you know, Randy, if you're in a situation like I am, nobody ever says anything.
Very true.
You know, and I did, because I knew how great this guy was going to wind up being. There are a few people that we meet that are just absolute naturals that work, but they're naturals. And this guy was one of them. The guy, my PD decided, now we're going to kind of stay the course, and we don't doubt it. And I went, okay. The guy was John Brandmeier, who's a legend in Chicago.
Wow.
You know, I mean.
The big 89 WLS, right?
Yeah, I think he was at 89. Yeah. So what wound up happening on this thing, and it's kind of like, yeah, this is a little bit off the subject, but when you kind of mentioned this thing to me, one of the things I was thinking of is when I was sitting in the middle of Spokane, Washington, and I had guys in New York and San Francisco and Chicago and big markets willing to take time out of their lives to go ahead and go through a tape of a guy that was a medium guy at best. When I would get weekenders coming in, I would always, because they were the lowest form of life in a radio station, I always try to make sure that I spent a little bit extra time and try to help a guy out or talk to him or critique a tape or whatever. So, you know, that's the one thing that I did wind up doing. It was maybe a little bit different what a lot of other guys did. But and that's kind of like the deal. Even after I wound up getting out of radio, I wound up doing the same thing with other guys that I'm around in construction or doing other things to help somebody out. Now, I may not have the right way, but at least I'm willing to talk to somebody.
And, you know, that brings up something that I actually left Randy out on this deal at KGRB, but Ichabod Kane. I got a little story to tell you about him. I'm a baby DJ, circa, 78, 79. And I get a hold of Icky at KJR, and he says, yeah, bring your tape in, and I'll sit down with you and go over it break by break. And I'm at radio school, KPEC at Clover Park, right?
Okay.
So the guy invites me to Harbor Island, KJR. I'm in awe because, oh, wow, here's Lockwood. Oh, I just saw Steve West in the hallway. Amazing. So Ichabod spends like 45 minutes to an hour, and he didn't have to do that, but it really told me something about him.
I'll tell you another story of his. An acquaintance of both of ours, Bruce Cannon, had passed away early. And he was just like a local legend. And so they had, and I don't know why they did it, but they had a celebration of life for him at one of the restaurants, like a second level, on the waterfront in Tacoma. And so we went in there. I'm guessing there's 200 or 300 people there. You know, everybody from mayors to disc jockeys, and there's all manner of people. And the guy that they chose, I don't know why they did it, but they chose Ichabod as kind of like the MC or the guy to kind of do this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't seen him in 20 or 30 years. And I'll be damned, he went up, and he is just the absolute most gracious and humble guy. But he was absolutely so smooth. You could have put him on some big event that was happening at a major club in Vegas, some roast or something like that, and he would have been every bit. In other words, you know, the term that we use is major market, right? If you belong in a major market. And I saw that, and I go, this guy's L.A. He's major market. Mm-hmm. And it's just absolutely natural. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that he studied. It wasn't that he had to try and work his way up the chain of command or whatever. He is. And you're right. Charlie was one of those guys that was a natural. Lockwood was a natural. It's something you just hear and print through. Our old buddy Buzz Barr was one of those, or Tom Murphy, who was over at Kiss and then down in L.A. and Chicago. There's certain people that just lend themselves to it. But there are journeymen, and then there are heavyweight champs, you know. And I was fortunate that I never had to go against a heavyweight champ. But to be honest, after I've sat back now and had years to go back and do it, if somebody said, Ralph, we got a job for you in New York, I go, okay, let's go. And maybe that's why the San Jose thing wasn't that hard. When I was talking to Steve York, he went from WOKY in Milwaukee to CFL in Chicago.
Wow.
In one step. And I had talked to him during that period of time. And I said, Steve, I said, how do you know that you're ready for, you know, to go from, like, Milwaukee was, I think, like Portland, like a top 30 market. Chicago's number two or three at that time. And I said, how do you know you're ready to do something like this, you know, to go into the big time? He said, Ralph, it's simple. They thought I was good enough, so I'm good enough. And I mean, you don't have to. The insecurities and the rest of it didn't matter because the people that were in charge, and it wasn't just one guy that was your cousin, said, you're good enough. Okay, I'm there. Let's go.
Brother Ralph Cole joining us here on the Northwest Radio Podcast. And Ralph, you were a music director during the mid to late 70s in your career. And I was kind of wondering, you know, what was the dynamic in the relationship with the trade publications and the label reps?
I went in cold as a music director, so I didn't have other experience, but I knew that there was a tremendous amount of attention being paid to me because Sholin watched us because he had been in San Jose. So I knew that if I added a record, it was going to get at least a review or a listen by the RKO group. I had everybody and their cousin call me. The first thing you do, and I'll go back a little bit before this, I'm old enough to have remembered, and I may have watched it on TV, the Paola hearings. And I was about to be damned if I was going to go ahead and do some kind of a favor for somebody and A, ruin a career on it because of some screwing around. So I played it straight, but I didn't want to go ahead and be inundated with stuff. So I just had a way to say, I want your regional, your national guys the hell out of here. I don't want to be dealing with 15 guys. You're the local guy, and as long as you don't screw with me, we'll be okay. And one of the things that wind up happening, I wouldn't add some record. And so the guy says, Ralph, I want my regional guy from L.A. to come up and fly up and have lunch with you. I went, okay, so I'll sit down at the table at some damn restaurant with this guy. I said, here's the deal. We can talk about all this stuff all you want, but if you think I'm going to add your record because you're here, you're mistaken. So here's what winds up happening. And I would explain to him why I hadn't added the record. And I said, is that what your local guy was telling you? He said, yeah. I said, okay, that's the deal. He's doing his job. Leave him alone. We're doing things our own way. Things are going to work out. And if it's right to add, it gets added. If it's not, it's not. I said, but here's the deal. If you get a call from me, drop every damn thing you got and answer that phone because there's going to be hell to pay because somebody's screwing up. I just left it at that. The one thing that we did wind up having is we got killed because KFRC was getting exclusives, and they would have them for 2 or 3 weeks. By the end of my tenure there, that's when I would get on the phone, and I'd call the regional guy, and I said, KFRC's on this. What the hell's going on? Well, I said, I thought you told me we were important to you. Oh, yes, you are. I said, then you get, and I did. I said, you get a goddamn courier on the plane out of L.A. I want a copy of that record delivered to my place by 3 o'clock this afternoon. And usually within 48 hours, I eliminated it, and people at the radio station were going, what the hell is going on? Because there were couriers coming in off out of the San Jose airport into our place to hand deliver the damn units. So yes, it was a hard ball, hard pressure game, and there was no screwing around. There was no screwing around.
What were the, was it just the Gavin and R&R back then, or?
Oh, yeah, there were several. Gavin was the cleanest as far as you could trust them. R&R was okay. Billboard was a hype. Mm-hmm. And Cal, God help Cal Rudman. Cal was, hell, nobody's going to shoot me anymore. Cal was mafia. Everybody thought he was East Coast mafia. I grew up on the East Coast. I could smell this crap. I could smell this crap. We had a guy that was an independent record promoter. There's some guy that came out of Pittsburgh and a bit of a story. He wanted me to meet this guy, and I met this guy, and this friend of mine said, well, you know, he's a real nice guy. I wanted nothing to do with the son of a bitch, and a year and a half later, he was doing time. You know, you just got no time for this kind of crap. Now, if I was back in the East Coast, it may have been a different deal, but they didn't own the West Coast.
Brother Ralph Cole joining us, and Ralph, before we get to the Grace Harbor PUD chapter in engineering in your life, you've been working on an analog studio at your compound in Elma, Washington. What gives with that, and how's that all going?
It's like the number two project. What I'm doing is accumulating stuff that my wife doesn't know about. So we got some things at work. I want to make it a combo analog digital kind of thing. And I got an idea. I had some guys up at Green River, and they got something like that. And that's something that I want to do. And so I'm working towards it, and we'll just kind of keep whipping away. I've got my ITC triple stackers and a IC10 board and some turntables and such. And so the stuff actually that guys were throwing out is hard to find. But, yeah, after the radio thing, it just got to be crazy, and I looked around, and I didn't see anybody in their 40s in the business. And I said, you know, you're going to have to make a change. And I was lucky enough that I did have an electronics background. So I said, okay, what's the next thing you want to do? And I figured, well, I want to work on the docks. I want to be around boats and ships. Uh-huh. And so I wound up doing marine electronics for a year, and to make a long story short, I wound up coming back on the harbor for a weekend. And a neighbor across the way said, we got a job at a draftsman at a power company. I went, yeah, what the hell? We'll give that a try for a while. And I fell in love with the damn business. It's completely different than anything I thought it was. Anyway, yeah, it wound up working out okay. I had gone through, it's like you guys in radio going through program directors that don't know what they're doing because they got their first job as being a PD. And that utility, since it was more rural, I experienced 8 general managers in my tenure there, and there were only a couple that were worth a darn, and it was crazy. So basically, the people were good, but for a lot of times, the company was horrible. Right now, it's run pretty good, but it was a darndest thing. I got to go back and tell you one last story here. Do we have a couple minutes?
We have about 4 minutes. You bet.
Good. I'll tell you the two clowns story.
Oh. I know two clowns.
Okay, next to Keto in Longview, and the guy that turned me onto this, his name was Buzz Hill. He was the guy at Audion with Charlie Brown that invented, what's the scrubber?
Vox Pro.
The Vox Box, right? So he's at Keto. And what he taught me to do is at 9 o'clock before they shut down the two clowns, they would always have extra chicken. And rather than buying it at retail, he said, how much do you want for all the chicken? Give me a deal, right? and so he got his deal on the chicken. I said, oh, I never knew that. In New York, you always paid retail, right? And so I said, oh, this is kind of fun. Next thing that winds up happening, I go to Spokane, but I still loved Captain Yobi's fish and chips. So I wound up working a deal. I came back to Keto, and I built them a production room, and I got a deal for a trade for Captain Yobi's fish and chips that I took a whole bunch to Spokane and put them in a freezer, and we would wind up eating them every once in a while. Well, after all this stuff is done, I moved to Grays Harbor. And this is the ultimate place for guys swapping and trading and not having money. And you got some 4x4s, I'll give you 50 rounds of ammo kind of stuff. It's the damnedest thing. And that's what I love about this, because there isn't a lot of cash. And it does get recycled, and stuff doesn't go to waste. And so I just love this part of it, and I'm doing a little bit of that with equipment right now. You know, a guy's got this, I'll swap you this for that. And all that started with the two clowns in Longview, Washington.
And, you know, talking about two clowns, Ralph, I worked in that same building, 1130 Washington Way in Longview. And I would go to two clowns, and they must have made it a tradition, because I would get the same thing. But my kryptonite was the corn dogs.
Oh, can you give me 3 more minutes?
Absolutely, brother.
Okay. I got to tell you one last one. We're talking about chicken. Okay. So Ocean and I know each other. I call him up, and on a Sunday, he's got a Sunday air shift at KFRC. Jeff Coffer's their engineer, right? It's the engineer disc jockey setup. And so, yeah, come on up. I said, okay. And so before we go up, we stop at the liquor store, we grab a fifth of Ballantine's, and go into the studio, and I'm sitting as a competitor, right, in his radio station on a Sunday, and I said, are we going to be in trouble? He said, oh, no, Spears is in Miami, ain't going to be back till tomorrow. And I went, okay. And so anyway, we're sitting there having a time of our damn lives, and Ocean says, God, I'm hungry. I looked at him, and about this time now we're a few rounds in, right? And I go, Bob, I said, I tell you what. I said, can you give me 15 seconds on the air? I'll get us food.
Oh, man.
KFRC,
oh,
right?
God.
KFRC. Okay? So I go, okay, so what do you want? He said, I want chicken. So I look up in the phone directory, and there's a place on Van Ness, which isn't too far from the radio station. Mm-hmm. And I call this guy up, and I said, look, here's the deal. I'm sitting at KFRC with a guy, and I said, I can give you about 15 or 20 seconds about how great the chicken is at your place, da-da-da-da-da. Can you get some chicken for us? And I talked to him for a few minutes. He goes, yeah, okay. He said, you know, you want some Coke, you want a little bit of this, some French fries, whatever. I said, yeah, sure, you know. So I said, okay. So sure as hell, I get a hold of Osh. I said, Osh, give me 15 seconds on this guy, and Osh does it, right?
Oh, my God.
20 minutes later, there's a knock on the back door. The guy goes ahead, and we get piles of goddamn chicken, right? And the punchline is, oh, yeah, I know about you guys because I used to do it all the time for the all-night disc jockey. So we're in there eating this chicken, okay? And we're sitting there, you know, chicken wings and bones and crap and grease and the whiskey and everything else, and in walks Spears.
No.
Yes. This is on a Sunday, and I went, oh, shit. You know, he's going to get his ass fired because of me. You know, I mean, first of all, you don't have visitors. Secondly, you ain't got whiskey. Thirdly, you ain't got it. Well, Spears heard it because his plane landed. He's listening to KFRC on his way in, and Ocean is talking about this great chicken at this place on Van Ness.
You know, Michael Spears, he was one smooth cat.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, he goes ahead. I said, I figured this one out. I beat feet and get the hell out of there, right? And it turned out Ocean got himself in trouble. But it's like when we talked about guys that there's nobody else like. You couldn't get rid of him. You couldn't get rid of Dr. Don Rose. You couldn't get rid of Matt Flanagan. I mean, there was just something about them that was absolutely magical. But, yeah, that's my story and my 30 feet away from greatness.
I can totally relate to that. Back when I'm a baby DJ, I'm hanging out with Jeffries, Mark Boland at KJR on a Sunday.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So he hears some noise out the window. He looks out. It's like a little one-foot-by-one-foot window out to the parking lot. He goes, oh, my God. My boss is here. And I'm like, Steve West, thank you to meet Steve. He's like, hey, you just stand there and don't say a word. First time I got to meet Steve, and he was in on Sunday to do his Squire shop spot. So, all right. Great stuff, Ralph. Hey, we got to get running. I just want to thank you very much for taking a little time out and kind of pulling the curtain back. It's always entertaining and certainly fun to talk with you, and I'm going to be seeing you over on the coast after the first of the year, if that's cool.
I'll make your life miserable and you buy.
I know you will, and you want me to bring my Carhartts to crawl under the house.
That's exactly right. Yeah, bring a tool belt.
Hey, buddy, give the best to Penny, and you guys have a happy holiday season. We'll talk to you soon, brother.
Okay, ready. Thanks for the call. Bye.